Iowa everywhere.
Saturday, May 4th at Memorial Balloon Field in Indianola, Iowa. Spring Revelry with Turnpike Troubadours. Ryan Bingham with the Texas Gentlemen. Trampled by Turtles, Muscadine Bloodline, Josh Malloy, Caitlin Butts, Tyler Halverson, and Cody Canada celebrating 20 years of soul great. Turnpike Troubadours, Ryan Bingham, and more. Details at springrevelry.com. Best for you. Get your Spring Revelry tickets now through Ticketmaster.
Spring is here. It's time to start thinking about family fun in the outdoors. This is Chris Williams promoting my good friends at Plaza RV in Bonder Ranch. I've now bought two travel trailers from this locally owned company in the past 5 years. It's completely changed my family's life. We love spending time in the outdoors, tailgating, and most of all, being together. Camping has been an awesome escape for us, and I would encourage you to think about it as well. Head over to their lot in Bonder Ranch. They have motorhomes, travel trailers, truck trailers, fifth wheels, and more. Check them out today at PlazaRV.com. They're 100% locally owned. Tell them that Chris Williams sent you.
Heartland Flags and Gifts presents Legends and Listeners with Scott Docterman and Chad Lystico. Fly them high and fly them proud. Find your flag at HeartlandFlags.com. Breaking down the Big Ten from the Channel Seat Studios, this is Iowa Everywhere.
Hey, Hawkeye fans, Big Ten fans, Iowans, and Swifties everywhere. It is episode 36 of Legends and Listeners, a show about the Iowa Hawkeyes and the Big Ten Conference, coming to you live from the Channel Seed Studios here on the Iowa Everywhere Network. I am your host, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register, and joined by the Athletics, Scott Docterman, as always. Scott, the big Hawkeye news this week was Iowa women's basketball landing point guard Lucy Olson from Villanova. We'll get to that later in the show, but we are here the day after Iowa football coordinators talked for the first time and last time, first time in 2024 and last time until August, and the day before the Hawkeyes open spring practice at Kinnick Stadium. So I feel like we got to talk about football, right?
Yeah, it should be about time, right? I mean, we've stretched this out every single week, and we could justify going basketball early, as you said, with Lucy Olson. And then the last time we spoke, two key players for the men's team have found their new homes, a controversial awards ceremony, and then a new player on the men's team. But guess what? Football still is the straw that stirs the drink, especially now that Caitlin Clark's in Indianapolis. So it's a perfect time to talk football, especially with the spring practice. Not a game, but practice tomorrow.
It was funny hearing Tim Lester talk about, like, he was kind of asking us, like, what? It's not a game, right? Like, and how is this going to work again? And he was saying about 20,000 fans. And I was like, nah, won't be 20,000, maybe like eight.
Yeah.
But anyway, we heard from Tim Lester, Phil Parker, and LeVar Woods on Thursday in that order. Of course, Tim Lester has to dominate this conversation. It's the most interesting thing. It's the thing everyone wants to talk about. It's the stuff we're most interested in, Scott. So, and I know you wrote a nice article about that today on The Athletic. Before we get to like specifics about the offense, et cetera, what have been kind of your early vibes of Tim Lester thus far?
It seems like the players have taken to him, that it's a different voice. He brings a different energy. And it seems to me that the players are willing to accept it because they understand what they went through last year. And obviously we all saw it, but it's worse for them than it is for us, Chad. I mean, you know, you don't go out there hoping to, I hope we score 7 points today and win. You know, that's just not part of the deal. So I think that there seems to be an energy, especially among the skill position players, that things have changed and things are going to get better. And I really liked what he had to say. As far as, you know, and then talking to the offensive line, because that was one of the areas I was most concerned with, that they seem to be taken with it, too, because they understand some of the, you know, whether it's eye candy or what have you, a lot of the motions and trades and stuff before snap and even at the snap helps them get to their spots. And that is critical when you're talking about running the football. And if it makes their jobs easier, they're all for it. They don't have to change their fundamentals, just basically help slow down the defense and how they pursue, and then it helps them get to their blocks, and then maybe they'll look a lot better if they could actually get to the chance to not be behind the defender before the ball gets there.
Yeah, I like everything. I mean, I really like what I'm hearing from Tim Lester, especially the way he has gone about installing the offense. I like his upbeat energy. It's a fresh voice. It's not stale. He basically promises changes, guarantees changes. He said it's vastly different. I think that was something something similar to that quote. It's much different system. So that all is good. We've needed different to watch, to cover, to write about for a long time. The predictable, the stale, just the bad of this offense needed a fresh start. It feels like it's getting that with Tim Lester, and we don't know what it's going to look like on the field. He definitely is in the Kirk Ferentz camp, Scott, of not raising expectations. I mean, he kept things pretty low key, I would say, yesterday in terms of like what to expect. He said it's we got a long way to go. There's been a lot of bad days. There've been some good days, but I do like the vibe that I'm feeling from him. Because when you listen to him talk, you know, I think it was probably 25 minutes yesterday, right? Like, you can tell how he has a process and a teaching way about it. Like, you know, they've installed 85% of the playbook about, but it's just like, it's not necessarily about like getting, and this is kind of what I wrote about, like worrying about the quarterback right now. It's just about getting everybody acclimated to this system, and then once Cade is ready, they'll plug him into this system.
Yeah, that's kind of the key, and that's kind of what I wanted to get from him, is that, you know, I think out of the five offensive units, three of them are in pretty good shape. I will count the offensive line in that. I know that they have been, you know, much harassed, but let's face it, with that passing game last year, there wasn't much they could do. I mean, they actually had some breakout run performances, but without passing the ball, they became very predictable, and I think the play calling didn't help them. But so I think that the offensive line, I think the running game, and I think the tight ends are in pretty good shape. The wide receivers and the quarterbacks are not. What I like to hear from Tim, and I think he really expressed it well, was that they're not going to just wait for units to catch up because of the quarterback situation, that there's Cade's going to be there in June, you know, or maybe somebody else will be too out of the transfer portal. But they're not going to slow down all of that because 10 other guys have to get ready for it. And so whether that's Cade McNamara or quarterback to be named later, but we're just going to go with Cade McNamara today. That's really, you know, essential to making sure that the line, the running game, the receivers all understand where they're going. The receivers, I thought he was pointed in some of his commentary. You know, the fact that we're always looking in the portal, I think it tells you kind of where things are. This is a unit that's not only inexperienced, it's really very young and not very good. I mean, you know, across the board, it's got a lot of work to do. And then you throw on the fact that the quarterback, the starting quarterback isn't here. You wonder how much you can get out of this. And I think you had a really good question at the end, like, what do you want to see? And I think his answer was very long, but I think it was really good.
Yeah, I looked at the transcript. Thank you, University of Iowa, for transcribing.
Yeah, this, yes.
13 paragraphs on the last answer. It was nice. I mean, he you know, he kind of rambled a little bit, but I enjoyed it. He's like, and basically the gist was, and I know this is like going to be a punchline probably, but like, he's like, I just want to not jump off sides. I want to get the plays off. I want to get the plays in, you know, and there is a lot of motion. Like, that is a huge part of this. And I liked how he explained that as well. Like, that's going to keep the linebackers from just attacking. How many times have we seen that, Scott? Last three seasons with Spencer Peters back there, or whoever, Deacon Hill, just attacking. And you just can see it from the press box. You're like, they just can't block them, you know, like, because they're just sitting there just waiting for the snap to just charge in and sack an immobile quarterback, you know?
Yeah.
And with this motion, the idea is to back them off a little bit, you know, get them a little bit confused. And I was actually listening to a Chicago Bears podcast this morning. Mm-hmm. Shocker.
Yeah.
It was Mark Schlereth, you know, they were talking about the NFL draft or whatever. And he was talking about how a lot, he said, like more than half of college offenses, like, don't really use the type of motion that the NFL does, like we see with the 49ers. We've referenced a lot,
you know.
But I like that Iowa is introducing that. It's going to take some time, but I like that they're bringing kind of an NFL system to college in that respect, because they've always asked their quarterbacks to do a lot. Why not, number one, ask the other guys to do some of that, you know, help with some of the protections, help with some of the, you know, keeping the defense, you know, the numbers count where you want it, you know, finding those mismatches with motion. I mean, I feel like it's smart the way Iowa is, or Tim Lester is approaching this. I'm excited to see how this motion looks, how it plays out. And I, you know, be patient, Hawkeye fans. This is not going to be an overnight fix. It's just not going to be. And it wasn't going to be no matter who you hired at offensive coordinator. But I just like the long-term thinking here from Tim Lester.
You have to do something different. And he was the one that I think had the right idea. And part of it is he's marrying some NFL style. You know, he's with Matt LaFleur, you know, they've known each other a long time, but he was there last year as an analyst, and he can kind of spot how you can work tight ends in with an RPO system and make it work for a team like Iowa and maintain, you know, its zone running game, which it really likes. It doesn't want to give that up, but how do you make it better? And as you said, you know, just the overwhelming numbers, Iowa's receivers have been bad. I mean, last 2 years, the receiving core has caught 76 passes in each one of them, which is the low, tied for the lowest since 1982. And so you need to have more. So other teams are just comfortable saying, you know, we'll just cover you one-on-one and you're not going to get the ball to them anyway. And then we're going to just send everybody to the line of scrimmage. And then when you didn't have any motion or it really impacted how the flow of the second level and the safeties to get to that spot to hit the running backs. And that's why the running game never really got off. It wasn't so much that the line missed their blocks. It was just that everybody beat the line to their spot and it didn't allow the line to actually work against its opponent. In the past, you'd had cut blocks, especially on the backside, but now those are legislated out of the game. And I think this is a way to say, all right, we concede no more. You know, we understand. And then you go and you defeat that with motion to create that hesitancy to ensure that there's not such a free flow there, because the motion could go the other way. Because I actually, you know, went through like the last 4 years of running with jet sweep and with motion. The numbers are double what they are when they don't have it. So it makes sense to use this as a staple with your zone scheme, because then it can all work. And if you can get Iowa out running vertical on the line of scrimmage and allowing somebody like Caleb Johnson a full head of steam, he's a monster. He's a guy who's going to run for 12, 13, 1400 yards. So I like the way this is being built. Do they have the personnel to carry it out in the passing game? We're not going to see that Saturday. Let's just call it like it is. Hopefully we see some plays by the wide receivers, but we're not going to say, wow, they're ready for Ohio State.
Yeah, exactly. I like what you said there. I got a couple thoughts in my head here. I like what you said. You're talking great commentary there. I like what you said about the running backs, because I think all of this eye candy and stuff, you know, talk about downfield passing, et cetera, is actually all helpful to that running game. Like you said, that you can't just go totally crowd the box and just make it impossible to run. You have to respect, if I was going to put motion, you have to, I mean, you can't not follow that motion or account for that motion. And if I was going to take some shots downfield, you would think that would loosen things up quite a bit. Now I do want to at least push back or have a conversation about how bad have Iowa's receivers been. I mean, I'm just seeing Tyrone Tracy Jr.'s being discussed now as possibly a day two pick, and they just didn't use him. Like there's still like a lot of just befuddling usage of talented receivers. I felt like that were in the program And that even includes Amir Smith, Marsette, and Brandon Smith. They, you know, down the who were really good receivers, and they did use them, but I don't think they used them enough. I just feel like the system was not, you know, set up to succeed. That's kind of what I'm gathering from some of this Tim Lester stuff. It's like, I mean, if he's junking a lot of what I was done, like that's a sign that it was broken. I mean, we saw it, but just that Wisconsin example still sticks in my head. The jet sweep with Zach Ortworth out blocking.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. What are you doing there? Like, how is that your play call? I mean, it was time for change. And I feel like change is at least here. It just might not be like everything you want it to be August 31st.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, the scheme was outdated. The play calling wasn't very good. And then there was a lot of situations where it was like, well, we'll just have, you really didn't take into account the people that were involved. You know, you mentioned the jet sweep with Nico Ragaini behind Zach Ortworth making his first appearance in a game. He's blocking he's a true freshman blocking a senior linebacker on 4th and 1. You know, even though Wisconsin's defense was a shell of itself last year, it wasn't anywhere, you know, that way. But you know, whether it was Iowa's problem, which it was, or the players, I mean, you know, here are just some of the numbers. From the 2018 through 22 recruiting classes, there were 10 freshman receivers. 8 of them transferred. 1 was playing baseball. The only one to finish his tenure was Nico Ragaini. I mean, that is a wasteland. That is destroying anything you want to do. There's no the attrition level. I mean, and you go back to Amir and Brandon, they were really good, but they didn't get enough out of them. They should have done more with those guys. And that was, you know, they were okay, I thought, with Nate Stanley. They weren't as good with Spencer Petras in their 1 year, but they parlayed that into some nice recruits that left. Keegan Johnson, Arlen Bruce. I mean, was it their fault or, you know, that we don't know. You know, we're not going to get into that part of it. But, you know, and then out of the nine out of 10 leaving, then you add 2 other in that same time frame, 2 transfers, Charlie Jones and Oliver Martin, who then went on to other Big Ten programs out of that after Iowa. And it's like, you got to do something about this attrition. You cannot compete for championships with that level. So I like the fact that the receivers are more engaged. It seems like the receivers are in better spots. There was one play, Chad, I'll point out, last year in that Northwestern game. And it was the interception that Deacon Hill threw in the end zone. They had it was a 1 receiver route, and you had Nico Ragaini running in motion all the way across the formation, then up and running a go pattern for 30 yards. And Nico, of course, is a good possession receiver, but he's not a guy that can get up and go get the ball, especially when he's running 30 yards across and 30 yards up against defensive back who has inside leverage. And Deacon isn't exactly a guy to put the ball where it needs to be going. So what are you doing there? And I think Lester has an idea of how to structure an offense in a passing game. And that's what I like to see. They won't have a lot of success Saturday because Iowa's defense is still pretty good, you know, and we'll see that on full display because they'll be competitive. But I like the fact that they've got some changes and things are going to be moving in a different direction.
Well, much like we appreciated Tim Lester's candid nature and ability to bring us something new to talk about with this Iowa offense, we appreciate Heartland Flags and Gifts for helping us bring you Legends and Listeners for free every week. We can keep bringing you this episode and this show free every week if you keep sponsoring Heartland Flags and Gifts, which has you covered with nearly every sport, every team, and every flag. Visit our friends online, heartlandflags.com, or get your hands on some gear in store at 3719 Southwest 9th Street here in Des Moines, where I live. And there's another transfer, Scott. Jacob Bostic leaving the Hawkeye program. Kind of a jarring, not jarring, I guess, but just I was surprised, I guess, especially since he came to media interviews last week and now he's got an Iowa State offer. Very interesting. What do you make of that? And also maybe some of the names that we heard yesterday. It sounded like Caleb Brown, Caden Weechen, maybe Jarrett Bowie are the top 3 wide receivers this spring.
Yeah, it's hard to really gather too much. I mean, I think Caleb Brown has to be there because he's the most experienced, which is funny because, you know, it looked like he wasn't even going to be able to play until I think it was the Northwestern game with Deontay Vines' injury. And, you know, Deontay Vines is now catching passes for Old Dominion. But Bostic leaving was a surprise to me because I thought, here's an opportunity for him. This is the one, this is the opportunity you want. And now you're in a new offense. And why would you enter the portal now? And wherever you're going to go, you're going to be behind. You know, here you have a chance to start. So I'm perplexed by that unless you feel like I need a new opportunity to grow, blah, blah, blah. All right, fine, whatever, go move on. And I know Iowa State's prepared to take him, and he's if he goes. So that would make for an interesting Cy-Hawk sidebar, I suppose. But it's not like Jacob Bostic caught a pass last year. So, you know, it's just weird. But, you know, and then, you know, they're now at 89 scholarships. So, you know, how much of that can be, can you massage it through the collective? That's going to be interesting. You know, one theory that I had is, you know, if they go out and get somebody who's like experienced MAC level, who's not getting a lot of offers. And if you could kind of say, look, our collective will make up for your tuition in the fall and room and board, and then we'll put you on scholarship in January because they're just going to have an exodus of epic proportions in January. If that might connect a guy or two to get to Iowa, you know, you would hope a Charlie Jones guy, but realistically, hey, you know, it's just like a scholarship. You're just getting it from a different pile. I think they need to do that in the receiving room, you know, and I'm fully advocating getting another quarterback. They have to get another quarterback. I don't think there's really any question in my mind, because if Cade can't play, you cannot have what you had last year. And I'm not going to go out and blast Deacon Hill. I'm just saying you just can't have it.
Yeah, that's exactly where I wanted to take the conversation next, Scott, because that was the main thing I wrote about. My colleague Tyler Tashman wrote about kind of the general offense. I know you wrote about a lot of different things in your article. It was really good. I focused on what he said about quarterbacks, because I know we talked a little bit about it last week. People are like, been out of shape that Deacon Hill's getting the one reps, but if you read between the lines, you read everything he said, because I even asked him, like, have you seen enough to feel good about where you're at with the number two spot? I didn't answer the question. Mm-hmm. So in other words, no,
yeah,
we're not. And, you know, the portal is open. The portal is open. So as soon as somebody enters that they want, they're going to go after him. And I believe, you know, I think Iowa Swarm is ready to as well. So, they need that not just for this year, but potentially for the future. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, even if Cade is what you think he's going to be, this is it for him.
Yeah,
and, right. You know, James Rezar is not your 2025 plan at this point. He hasn't even on campus yet. So, that's another part of this whole deal. And Tim Lester's going to want his own guy.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. I mean, he's coming into a situation where, he didn't pick any of these quarterbacks.
Right.
I mean, these are Bud Meyer's guys, really. So, anyway, I think they're going to go after quarterback, Scott. And I also, what I put in my article, and I hope you guys at least just give it a look, because I feel like it'll calm you down about this Hill stuff. Like, Hill is basically running the one offense so that the other 10 guys can learn the offense. Because he's like the best at the checks right now, yeah, more than Marco Linus. It doesn't mean Marco's not going to jump him at some point. It just means, like, Deacon is actually performing a pretty valuable service here, Scott.
Yeah.
He's basically sitting in for Cade McNamara. Lester even said, I'm calling the plays as if Cade is in there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's a pretty good team guy to me if you're Deacon Hill. Like, you aren't even getting an offense that's at all catered around you. Not that you deserve it, mm-hmm, but he's being a team-first guy, Deacon Hill is. And I think that it's a smart way to go about it, but also you just got to stop freaking out about Deacon Hill taking the one reps at this point.
There's this knee-jerk reaction that Iowa fans have had for a long time, and I kind of get it. It's semi-PTSD over just the offense in general for 10 years, but it's when you see the spring depth chart, you know, oh my God, I can't believe this, you know, or somebody comes in and they're not number one, and you're like, what is that? You know, I remember that with Punter. You know, I think it was Michael Sleep Dalton. You know, he was here and people are, I can't believe Rastetter's still the punter. Well, he just got here. He's not even on campus yet, you know, that sort of thing. And so the freak out over Deacon Hill, while understandable, there's a reason why. And it's like, guys, the portal just opened again. They're going to get somebody in there. They need somebody in there because, as we've talked about, what wide receiver, the quarterback situation has been much worse. You know, going back to, you know, Nate, after Nate Stanley. I mean, Petras, you know, I'm not going to diss the guy. I think he was a quality recruit. Didn't quite pan out the way you wanted him to, but the players after that, I mean, you know, Manziel was okay, but then Padilla and Joey Labus and Carson May, you know, and on and on. You know, where are they? What are they doing? What did you guys do? How did you guys recruit these guys? And there's not been one of them that you've looked at and said, yeah, that's QB1. We need to move forward with it. And they're kind of, they've got to get something going here. And so that's why I think that the portal will erase that. If they can get somebody with 2, maybe 3 years of eligibility, bring him in and let him compete with Cade. Cade doesn't deserve to be, you know, number one up here. He hasn't done anything in Iowa. Yeah, he did at Michigan. He's come in. He deserves to be the incumbent, but that's it.
Right.
He hasn't led Iowa to anything. So I think, and if Cade's the best guy, let him play. If he's not, let him sit, you know, and see what he does. So I think bringing in competition at one, certainly to be the number two, is absolutely essential for this program to put itself in a position to where it can compete for a playoff berth, because I think the defense and a couple other aspects on offense make it so.
Yeah. And I think that is the intent. Now it could get botched there. You know, if they can't get someone, yeah, then it's time to start being a little bit more concerned. But I think at this point, the plan is to go get somebody. I'd be shocked if they don't get somebody. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't just sort of hope and cross your fingers. They've probably been working some back channels, you would hope. Anyway, that's that. And I also thought, hey, Tim Lester seems open to maybe some. He said, we've got some Marco plays. So he seems open to maybe, like, I would be fully advocating for, hey, a little package of plays for Marco Linez. Let's say it's third and 1.5, and you put him in those quote-unquote wildcat or whatever with a run-pass option. I would be full, you know, bring that on for me. I want to see stuff like that.
Imagination, creativity, yeah, right. That's, you what know, I'm saying. Stuff that other people do that, you know, and that's why we're dealing with a lot of the angst over Deacon Hill and all this over the years. And we've had our own frustrations, but we've kind of got to live with that in some ways, but the fans don't. And I understand it. It's like, we're seeing the same thing over and over and over and over again, and we can't get out of it. And so to see any change, I mean, I remember Marshall Cain took a fake field goal in the opener in 2015 and got tackled on fourth down, and people were on their feet cheering because it was something different. And so, yes, all those, you know, they did the Wildcat a couple of years ago during the COVID year with Tyler Goodson, and it went really well. And then, oh, it's a gimmick. We don't want to run it anymore.
Yeah, that was so weird.
And they never threw out of it. You throw out of it once, it changes the whole dynamic of the offense. So I'm just, yes, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you've been eating the stale cracker for 15 years, and now finally you get a Ritz cracker. Is it good? I don't know, but it's something different and it tastes better. That's kind of where we are right now with the offense.
Well, we did hear from Phil Parker and LeVar Woods as well, Scott. Let's each give like one thought of what we heard from each of those. Phil went after Tim Lester. Give me your Phil Parker top takeaway from Thursday.
I would say that he seems to like the rotation up front. That's one thing that I had a little bit of concern with, because that was the unit that took the biggest hits with no Joe Evans and Logan Lee. That, okay, where is the depth going to come from? and he seems to like it. Seems to look like, all right, we're looking at like one guy because, you know, you elevate Ethan Herkett, of course. You elevate Aaron Graves. They like Max Llewellyn. They like Jeremiah Pittman. Brian Allen seems to be a guy that's fitting in there nicely. And it's like, yeah, number eight, you know, it's like a couple of walk-ons. Luke Gaffney and Will Hubert have that chance to.
And you have Deontay Craig, too, which is really good.
And he and he was a starter, so yeah. I mention it. But, you know, really it's, you know, in him and Y.A. Black, you know, they're the top two. But the fact that they feel like they could go 8 or 9 and be okay, and maybe it's just, you know, gaps, you know, 7 to 10 snaps a game for some of those guys, that's fine with them. So that's what I took away from, because that was the only area where I'm like, I wonder how they're going to be. And it seemed like he was pretty set there.
Yeah. Phil's like, we'll find a guy. Like, I'm like, okay, I believe you. I believe you. I believe you. I believe Kelvin Bell, Jay Neiman, Seth Wallace. Very confident there. And I still am a little concerned about D tackle. Just don't love the depth there. But again, we're quibbling. It's not like the offense conversation where it's like, yeah, they don't have quarterback, don't have receivers, and you know, line was suspect. It's like we're looking for a fourth D tackle right now, you know. So, but I'll go with you know, the Phil surprise, Zach Luttmer, the new name. There's always a new. I was trying to think back, Scott, to like, who are some of like the little Phil drops we've gotten in the past? I feel like Geno Stone was one of those guys. Like maybe I feel like Hooker was in, like, hey, this guy, Imani Hooker, you know, he's pretty good. You know, like he always drops somebody, you know, like as
Jake Gervais, Jack Kerner. Man. Jack Kerner was probably the number one that I remember.
Okay. You know? Okay.
Yeah. It was like Jack Kerner, John Loudermilk back in the day.
Okay.
He was, Riley Moss, he was a big one. He might have been the biggest one of the bunch, that he was really all in on Riley. And you know, talking about him on, you know, even his first couple weeks of camp, I remember being in the indoor practice facility, and we got a chance to talk to them about midway through camp. And he was saying, oh, Riley Moss has been really good. He's going to be on special teams for us and all that. And that was his true freshman year. And so he was all in on Riley. So that probably being the one. but now we've moved past John Nestor to Zach Luttmer.
Next
Phil Parker special.
Well, and that's what a good program does, is they have depth waiting in the wings. I mean, you think about, I mean, potentially, you know, if Xavier Wampa goes pro, I don't have any idea if he will after this year, but he could. Yeah. And we know Quinn Schulte and Sebastian Castro are out of eligibility. So they're going to need two safeties and a cash next year. And you talk about Cohen Entringer, you talk about Zach Luttmer, Nestor.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about, you know, TJ Hall sounds like has had a good spring. I mean, it's just like that's how you continue to have a good defense year after year and seamlessly. So that's a great story. You know, good news, like that he likes Zach Luttmer. So pocket that. How about LeVar Woods?
You know, I would say it's probably a kicker.
Yeah, same.
For me.
Yep.
Because, you know, it's hard, you know, after all the craziness of basketball, we look back at the kicking situation and how kind of Drew Stevens slumped at the end, got pulled in the Nebraska game, and then didn't have an attempt in the last two games because they got shut out twice. So, you know, I think seeing, you know, he mentioned humility with Drew, and I think Drew needed that. You know, how does he bounce back? And if he shows it, he'll be, you know, he's a quality kicker. He's got some great feet and should be really good. And he's still got two more years. So that was probably the one takeaway that I had on the special teams part of it.
Yeah, same. I mean, that was my number one thing. I mean, well, I think people, you know, Reese Dakin, I know I didn't get to talk to him. I wasn't there Tuesday, but I know you guys did. And, you know, he's from Melbourne, Australia. He came from Pro Kick, same coach as Torrey, but he's not going to be Torrey.
Yeah.
The leg might be akin, but it's just hard to, you just can't expect that. And Woods sort of emphasized, there's some immaturity there. I don't think he meant that in a bad way, but like, he's just young compared to Torrey, who's 26. And I believe he'll be 27 by the time he actually punts for an NFL team this year as a rookie. So quick, hey, real quick before we move on, what round will Torrey go in? We'll talk about it next week too, but what round? Give me a number.
Four.
Okay. Four. Day three pick. Yeah. It would be so cool if he was like the, you know, late, like three supplemental, you know, like CJ Beathard was. Remember that? Yeah. CJ Beathard got drafted like one of the last picks of the third round. Right. Like, oh, shoot.
well, like Nate Kading was. You know, he was a third rounder.
Okay.
And, and what was really interesting was I was in the Chiefs war room that day, and they took a tight end, kind of a shorter tight end that was going to be like tight end number two to Tony Gonzalez and Chris Wilson. But I knew that they wanted Nate Kading in the worst way. They wanted him, but they just were, they thought he was a little rich to take him in the third round. And Carl Peter, it took him, and Carl Peterson was just mad. I asked him, I said, you know, with Nate Kading now going to the Chargers, what was your thoughts? And you just see this, you know, not only going, you know, not, we're not taking him, he's going to the Chargers, you know, Marty and everything. So I could see, you know, it's possible that he could go third round, but I would say four is where I project him. And so does Dane. So I defer to Dane Burgler in a Saints. I think he might be marching in New Orleans.
Oh man, Torrey in a dome. I mean, yeah, we'll see. I mean, the NFL draft this year, I know we're getting on, I hijacked this a little bit.
That's all right.
But it's not good in the late rounds. So I think a team will spend one of those fours. So it's not like with so many COVID people, COVID seniors using their last year, like you're seeing at Iowa, the draft is not as deep. So I think that benefits Torrey in terms of high draft positioning. So I like your pick. I'll be rooting for a three though, I like Torrey.
Yeah, I wrote about that today. Actually, that was kind of a NFL draft NIL crossover story. Is that they had the lowest entry since 2010 for underclassmen, and so many of them are those players. And Iowa is the poster child for that because not only have all those 6-year guys that came back, but then you have the younger, you know, like the Luke Lachey's and YA Blacks who decided to stay, and NIL is a major influence in that. And so that's happening everywhere where guys have that opportunity to say, well, I can make, let's just throw out a number that it's a good number that a lot of people have used, $200,000. Let's say that you could be a point guard for $200,000, or you could be a defender for $200,000 at the university, or you could go on and risk being a seventh rounder where maybe your signing bonus is $90,000. But of course, we know half of that goes to the government anyway, because it's a signing bonus, and then you get cut. Then what? Well, at least if you're in college, you get all that. That's all guaranteed. And then you have an opportunity to improve or whatever. And for somebody like Nick Jackson, he's like, I could be in the same defense for the second straight year, and this is the best one I've ever been in, and I could be coached well. Maybe it doesn't matter. You know, he's not going to tell me his number, but, you know, but still, that's what Iowa was able to capitalize on. And that's why, as you said, kind of going circling back with Torrey Taylor, that from rounds 4.5, the rest of the way, there isn't a whole lot of difference between late fourth rounder and a priority free agent. Mm-hmm. They're just in the same, you know, circle there. So that's why, you know, it's somebody like Torrey Taylor is an elite player who can change the game. It's a lot better than saying, well, we'll pick this linebacker here, because there's really no difference between the linebacker at pick, you know, 160 and then priority free agent. So that's why I think he probably does go high.
Well, I hope you all enjoyed the warm weather over the weekend and maybe the Masters. I hope you didn't take my bet. It lost, by the way, at DRF this past weekend, as well as a nice rich pour of Steeple Ridge bourbon. Steeple Ridge delivers a high-quality, delicious drinking, award-winning craft bourbon. If you don't find Steeple Ridge at your favorite retailer, ask for it by name. Steeple Ridge is distilled, aged, and bottled in Erling, Iowa by Lonely Oak Distillery. We've gotten 40 minutes in. Scott, a lot of football talk, so we'll have to be a little quicker with basketball. We'll run some quick offense here. Women's basketball news. The day after the WNBA draft, we're not going to talk anymore about Caitlin Clark this week. Iowa hosted Lucy Olson of Villanova. By the way, Caitlin was the first pick. I don't know if you saw that. Lucy Olson, they reeled her in. She commits on Wednesday. man, what a big deal for the Hawkeye women. 23 points per game score. I spent a lot of time watching her film, and man, I really like it a lot. I think she was probably about the best prospect they could get in the portal, and somebody who also fits personally. Sounds like she's a great culture fit, which obviously is so important to Lisa Bluter and everyone else there. A lot of excitement, and that was the one position they needed. They went out and got it done. Big week for Iowa women.
It's huge so many ways, as we said, because what you didn't want to do was go from national title game to out of the NCAA tournament completely and maybe a losing record. And not when you have some talent there. Hannah Stolke is an all Big Ten caliber player. Sydney Falter is. I think Taylor McCabe has potential to be not only a starter, but an impact starter. I like Kylie Feuerbach as kind of an off the bench person. And plus, they have a really good young class coming in. Four out of their five recruits are top 100 from ESPN. The other one is Miss Basketball in Iowa. So, but what they needed was kind of a stopgap, you know, and then of course, you know, next year they've got, you know, Addison Deal is committed to Iowa. And so you just needed that, you know, fill in the pothole and you did it with the number three overall scorer in the country. And she's got a couple of areas where I think she probably wants to work on, where they want her to work on. Sure, certainly, I think cutting down on her turnovers and 3-point percentage is probably the two. But you could not have find a better fit, because now you look at that lineup, Chad, and I don't know if you know how much thought you've given it, but you might as well, you know, what the heck. But you got her at the point, Taylor McCabe at the two, Sydney Falter is like the three. I would, you know, Hannah Stolke maybe is the four, and then Ava Hayden, you know, from the freshman coming in from Oregon.
That's exactly where I go to. Yep.
Yeah. And then you have Kylie Feuerbach is kind of your first big, you know, first guard off the bench. You know, Addison O'Grady can kind of fill in and, you know, maybe improve and stuff. So, you know, and then they've got other players as well. And then a lot of the freshmen, you know, because they, you know, they're all highly ranked. There's going to be somebody that surprises us there. So I really like this, this unit, the way we're seeing it being built. But if without Lucy Olson, I'm not so sure that it all works.
It would have been tough. And so, yeah, she will be kind of the new straw that stirs the drink. She's a high scorer, but she can do other stuff too. 5'9", really good player. Let me read an email I got from somebody off the story I wrote yesterday, just because I feel like it's going to capture everything perfectly and then we can move on. He said, I enjoyed your article on Lucy Olson. I am a Villanova women's basketball season ticket holder, and Iowa is getting a great player. Honestly, Lucy should have been considered for Big East Player of the Year. Compare her stats to Paige Beckers, and Lucy beats her on almost every category. Plus, Villanova has nowhere near the firepower as UConn. Interesting enough, Lucy's mom grew up in Norristown, the hometown of Gino Auriemma. Lucy is a wonderful kid, always a smile on her face, but she is competitive with heart. We are sorry to see Lucy go. She has been a joy to watch. Villanova's loss is certainly Iowa's gain. Go Hawkeyes! So, what a fan, huh?
That's crazy.
But I think that gives you reassurance, like just from somebody who's seen her play a lot. Like, she's legit good, and I think. You know, I don't want to get people's hopes up too high. Like, they're probably not going back to the Final Four. Probably not. Yeah. But they're going to be exciting. I think we'll see. We'll see how good she is here, but also exciting. And it helps Aaliyah Guyton. I mean, terrible luck with a torn ACL her senior year. She was going to be, you know, getting those point guard reps potentially this year. So it allows her to recover and at her own time frame as well. And I really like Taylor Stremlow coming in, too. I think she's going to be an instant impact. They got a good freshman class coming in. So, anyway, men's basketball. Do you want to talk about women or you want to go to men?
Oh, I think you were good, yeah.
Yeah, okay. The men's basketball team, Iowa men, pulled in a transfer of their own in 6'3", Morehead State guard Drew Thewell. He has big assist numbers, Scott, and it sort of seems to be a one-for-one replacement of Tony Perkins, who all of a sudden is leaving on like a little bit of negative terms and kind of like burning some bridges with Hawk fans and vice versa on the way out. So kind of a weird end to the Tony Perkins era as he goes to Missouri, a team that was 0-18 in the SEC last year.
Yeah. It's been a really interesting route because I think a month ago or so, you know, well, maybe 2 months ago, you know, you look at Tony Perkins and he was considered, you know, a really, you know, top shelf guy on this roster. And then, you know, he slumped late. Part of that was he wasn't 100% on the floor, but, you know, it just still you're out there playing and it's hard to you can't just make excuses for the guy. And but then last week at the PCA meeting, what Fran McCaffrey said was, you know, he's got a market value of around $500,000 and basically implying he's got to leave, you know, for the money and we can't afford him, which is kind of a back slap at the collective or fans for not, you know, giving him that kind of money. And then it's also a slap at Tony for leaving for the money. And then he leaves and he goes to Mizzou and, you know, he's tweeting out, it wasn't about the money. And it's like, well, what is it about then? Because you're going to a team that didn't win a game in the SEC against a team that was on the board, you know, the bubble. So you must hate your player, your teammates and your coaches. And then he didn't get an award, you know, but then Patrick McCaffrey, who you did write about and you had a one-on-one with, got the Chris Street Award, but he'd already committed to Butler by then. So, you know, I think there's a lot of questions as to, is that a double standard? You know, is this the double standard that Iowa basketball has lived with for a while of having, you know, sons that have more opportunities than other people? You know, there's just a lot of questions and speculation and these types of situations really drag it out.
Yeah. And I think we both can, you know, Tony says it wasn't about the money. I think we can both safely say he did not get the 500K. We'll just leave it at that.
No,
wasn't close to that. So, who knows? It's a weird situation, but I think overall in general, I think this Thewell guy averaged 6.2 assists per game. And I just think it'll be good overall, like, to not have a McCaffrey son on the roster. That's no effect. Like, I love Patrick and that's, you know, we've always had a good relationship and that's one of the reasons he did the interview with me. It'll be good for a fresh start a little bit here, just in general. So, especially if Peyton Sanford comes back, I'm excited to see what this team can do. They still need some players probably, but, they at least got somebody. And this, you know, I think this Thewell guy looks like a decent fit. So, I don't know. I don't know anymore. I mean, Patrick was good, by the way. I mean, he was to give people a little sense of that story. It's at hawkcenter.com if you want to. But, you know, he basically said, you know, my dad and I are like two different people. Like, we're not. And he said his dad was surprised that he was going to leave Iowa for another school for his last year. And so, but he also agreed with Patrick that it was the best thing for him personally. He said, I've been in Iowa City 15 years. I needed something new. And we know he's had all kinds of, you know, life adversity thrown his way between cancer, anxiety that he's been dealing with throughout his college career. A fresh start is good. And he gets to go to Butler, which is where his brother works. So he's going to have a support system. The town where his brother works, in Indianapolis. So he's at least going to have that support system as well. He loves Thad Matta. So that's that. Anything else? What else, Scott?
Yeah. You know, I think it's, you know, for Patrick, it's a good thing. And I mean, thinking back to the, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of money to go to college. And so I went to a JUCO and then I decided I wanted to try and I went to Arizona for a semester. I went to an Arizona JUCO there. It was a neat experience, but you just, sometimes when you're young, you just want to go out and do something new and different. And I understand that. And it is a fishbowl in Iowa City for anybody. And especially if you're, you know, the coach's kids. Now, the one thing, I think it was Greg McDermott maybe who mentioned it. It might've been somebody else, but he said, if you've got a kid who can play, you either want to be the best or the worst, because then it's easy. It's an easy decision. But if you're not, then it's difficult because then you look like you're playing favorites and you're changing, you know, and that that's very much the case, unfortunately, with Connor and Patrick, because, you know, Connor, whether he was injured, he's a different type of player. I think true basketball purists can really respect what Connor brought. Other people didn't as much. Patrick's was much more up and down, partly because of whether it was injuries or other issues. And it was, you know, so it was just very jagged in some ways as an era. And I think that this is, as you said, it's a healthy situation for the program to not have this burden, if you will, because Patrick was a good player. When he could play, he was good. And I think he'll be fine in Butler, probably good just out of sight, out of mind. He can just go there and concentrate on basketball. Either Butler is important, but it's not the Pacers, the Hoosiers, the Fighting Irish football team, or Colts, or whatever. So he can kind of just out of sight, out of mind. His brother, I don't know. I thought Connor worked in Iowa City, you know, but I don't wonder if that's just because of his girlfriend or what. But maybe he'll work over on site a little more often. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, we did see a lot of Connor. Yeah. Yeah, let me read one quote from Patrick, and then we can close up. He said, "Playing for my dad was not always easy. It's a tricky situation. I loved every minute of it, but it'll be good to play for somebody else and have a different set of pressures. When you're the coach's kid, you constantly feel like you have to prove yourself to everybody." So, yeah, I mean, that's beautifully said. I mean, it's hard on the player, too. He loves his parents. We know he's very close to his mother. He's gone through a lot, and his family's been there for him. So it's hard to leave, but it's also – he's 24 years old. You know, he's almost Tory Taylor's age. So he's ready to move on and leave the nest, so to speak. Any loose ends, Scott, we didn't cover today before we wrap up with our lovely Legends and Listeners?
Oh, my. Legends and Listeners. Well, I tell you what, you know, I wrote earlier this week about Big Ten, which I think is a big deal, and the transfer portal and how crazy it is overall for the Big Ten. And so far, I think as of yesterday, there were 35 new entries in the Big Ten portal. Caden Proctor was the number one ranked player that entered the portal. But I expect it to be a little more subdued, but I'm still waiting when it comes to Big Ten entries. Ohio State's quarterbacks are the ones to watch, because they had five who all were at least four stars, and, you know, and counting Will Howard as a four-star transfer. And then you have Devin Brown, and then you have the two freshmen, you know, so, you know, and then you have Lincoln there in the middle. So it's just really, that's going to be the match for the Big Ten in the transfer portal. But right now, it's kind of fascinating to see how things have kind of slowed other than at Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado is its own story. Good show, man. Looking next week, we will have a spring game to review, and the NFL draft. We didn't talk about Cooper DeJean today, but we will talk about him being a first rounder. So we'll have to do an earlier show, Scott. We'll have to communicate to you guys when we're gonna go, and because we got to do it before Thursday's first round, right? So anyway,
absolutely
good show. All right. Scott Dochterman, this is Chad Lystico. Thanks for joining us on Legends and Listeners from the Channel Seat Studios. Talk to you next week at a time TBD on the Iowa Everywhere Network.
Iowa Everywhere.